hardly anything good about it. And again, if you want to read my full review on that, you can catch that probably in the next couple of days over at gamesareevil.com.
Okay, very good. Gamesareevil.com. Are you still doing the reviews every now and again for them?
Every now and again.
Fantastic. Hey, Jay.
As my schedule permits.
Right on, man. Hey, thanks for taking time out of your recording sessions to drop some games on us, especially now since I really can't comment on the iPhone.
Yeah, we're going to have to fix that.
I got
to
find it. I'm hoping I left it at the Go-Go Studios. All right, man. Hey, take care of yourself. Keep in touch, and we'll talk to you soon.
Sounds good, man.
Bye. Jaden, Twitter.com, The Eternal. I'm feeling better. I'm feeling better, Keith. Thanks for asking. Oh, this is great. Let's open the lines. Konami is on the other end of the blower right now. Open it up, Keith. El Segundo, go! Tom Hewlett on the line from Konami, Konami headquarters. Hi, Tom.
How's it going?
Oh, it's going great. Oh, good, very good. Just to let you know, the We Talk Games Committee for Podcast Conformity and Listener Integration, as you know them quite frequently as the Wet Gack Flipleys, have required that I do this interview, only this segment of the show, as if I'm just getting over the swine flu. Now, this is to elicit sympathy from our older viewers. And also, I heard that it's really hip with the kids, the swine flu. So this will help resonate with the youths of today. Now, speaking of youth, Tom, you're kind of young. You're like a 30-year-old youngster.
Yeah, I've been in the industry for a while, though.
Yeah, you've been in the industry like 20 years.
Yeah, since I was 12.
How did that happen?
Well, I was pretty good at games when I was a kid, and my dad knew a guy at Virgin Games.
What kind of games were you good at?
Was I good at?
Yeah.
Everything on the Nintendo, pretty much. You know, your Marios, your Mega Mans, you name it.
How about Rob the Robot?
I actually never had a Rob. I played Gyromite with, I used the second controller to cheat.
Sure you do. Yeah, that's the easy way to do it. So your pop got you hooked up with somebody?
Yeah, the guy, Pete, they wanted kids to test their games because I guess people said their games were too hard. And they said, well, no, kids can beat the games. So they brought me in to prove that. And then I kind of had a summer gig testing games for a couple years.
What company was that for? I think I talked
Virgin
about
Games.
Oh, great. Okay, so you tested, what, Dracula and Mary Shelley's?
I tested a Prince of Persia game. I tested the McDonald's games they made.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I like those. And you did work on Heart of the Alien, though, didn't you?
I tested Out of This World.
Okay, so great.
Since Heart of the Alien had that on it, that's right. Probably why I counted.
I see. Yeah, I love that. No, I was happy that they came out for the Sega CD. That was one of the first titles I ever saw for the Amiga, and I was like blown away. As this is like watching cinema, as long as no one has faces and things. And then from there, you decided to try to start designing games.
Yeah, well, the guy I knew at Virgin split off and made his own company called Above the Garage Productions, and I got a bunch of money in high school by designing levels for his game, which never came out. So you can't play any of those levels.
Above the Garage, that's like Fonzie.
Yeah. And then in college, I decided to make my own game company, which was called Team Excalibur.
Right,
and
right.
We were working on an RPG called Mystery for the Game Boy.
Oh, for the Game Boy. What made you go for the Game Boy development? Because you thought that would be...
It was simpler, yeah. And like, we were really into RPGs, so we thought we could make a good one. But it's hard to compete with Final Fantasy VII when sure. You don't have any money.
Sure.
So we thought Game Boy would work, and we actually had a really cool demo that some people played, and we had some potential publishers, but that all fell through, and I used some people I met at Atlas to get a job at Atlas, doing some QA and then some localization work for them.
Cool. So I liked Atlas. They were a good company.
Yeah. And then I got put in charge of some stuff there, like Trauma Center, the surgery game.
Sure. Yeah, like those.
And then springboarded to Konami.
Very good. Have you traveled to Konami of Japan, or you're primarily in Konami of the USA?
I never had the privilege to travel to Konami of Japan yet. Hopefully in the future.
How do the board meetings work? Like, is there big conference calls, a weekly basis, or what?
Oh, I'm below that. I don't get to be in any of the top secret management meetings.
I see. Do you know anything about George Lucas trying to kill pinball?
No.
Yeah, I didn't think they would have anything to do with Konami, but you never know. You never know if that might trickle down somehow. When did you start working at Konami? Like, how old were you? Like 25 or something?
3 years ago.
Okay, 3 years ago. Oh, that's good. That's great. And since you started working at Konami, you actually worked on some really great games. Most of them are still in future releases. And we might jump around a little bit. The one that's coming out closest to now, I would assume, would be the Silent Hill Shattered Memories.
That's right.
Now, this is like a poop-your-pants scary game.
I hope so.
Yeah, I saw some videos for this. It looks good, it looks scary, and of course it draws on the things that were set up in the first Silent Hill for the PS1, I guess.
Right, we wanted to make a Silent Hill for the Wii, and there were a lot of different ways to do that, but it wouldn't really be fair to make like a sequel to Homecoming and expect the Wii audience, who maybe had never played Silent Hill before, mm-hmm. to catch up. And so we thought about this cool idea to remake the first game. But then the movie is similar to the first game, and we already did Silent Hill Origins, which is connected to the first game.
Right.
And Silent Hill 3 is connected to the first game. So we didn't want to betray longtime fans either by giving them something they didn't care about. So we've reimagined the original game so that this one is sort of people who played the original game have certain expectations and how they think the story goes. And Shattered Memories actually twists all that and betrays everything they think they know about Silent Hill.
Oh, that's great.
So it's a new experience whether or not you've played the first game, but there's a cool layer there if you have played the first game where, you know, we're screwing with you and stuff like that.
And you can draw the parallels, but yet it's a brand new game and reason to buy this. Did you try this Ju-on, the Grudge?
I haven't gotten a chance to play that yet, actually.
Oh, it's like walking in porridge. But, you know, I guess they push this. I mean, I love the movies. They're great movies.
Right.
But just from watching the videos of Silent Hill, I think this is a game that's really going to grab me a lot more and be controllable. It looks like it's very controllable. And all you are is armed with a flashlight and a cell phone. Now, the cell phone's kind of a new feature.
Right. Again, I mean, thinking about the Wii and how to make a good Silent Hill game, we didn't want to just feel like we took a Silent Hill game you've played 6 times already and then threw in some waggle.
Sure.
So we really wanted to integrate everything. And while we were doing that, we realized we had this opportunity to make it very immersive and not feel like you're playing a game. And so something that always draws you out of the game is when you go to the menu to switch your weapon or use a health item. Or
sure. Because it pauses
check a map,
everything.
Whatever,
yeah.
Because it sort of stops the game.
Yep.
So instead, we have the cell phone where when you want to check the map or whatnot, you just pull up Harry's cell phone, and you're still moving around the world, so you can still walk around, and monsters can still jump on you. But your menu's right there in your hand, and so that accesses all your features from map. You can actually make phone calls to sort of talk to characters in the world or get a better sense of Silent Hill. You can take pictures. You save your game that way. So it's really a good feature to keep all the things you need from a game, but also feel like a real world and keep you immersed.
Yeah, that camera phone, that really gelled with me, I guess, you know, because of the iPhone ads and the new all the new types of Android interfaces and everything that you see with the cell phones, and how it really does immerse you in the gameplay. And so that's used to save your progress, the cell phone, or is it used for clues or what?
A little bit of everything. One thing the old games have, and pretty much all old survival horror games have, is you find notes around in the environment.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Silent Hill always used those really well. So you'd find stories or something creepy that happened there. But it didn't really make sense that there was a note all the time. And so we've also taken that principle and made it more realistic in a lot of ways. And one of those ways is through the phone. I might come into an area and see something strange in the corner, so I pull up my camera, I take a picture of the corner, and then an image will appear.
Mm.
The example we've shown a lot of is that you come to a swing and you take a picture, and there's a girl on the swing,
right.
Not actually there. And so when you do that, you'll also get a voicemail. And so those voicemails kind of replace the notes. You'll also get calls that way to replace the notes, or you'll find like an answering machine, and you'll play that, and you'll hear a message. So we still have all those stories throughout the environment and the creepy things that keep you on edge, but they also feel more realistic. They don't feel like someone's leaving notes for no reason.
Right on. And speaking of the fact that you wanted to develop for the Wii, I think Konami really has brought out some graphic power of the Wii that many other companies, I guess, don't think is there.
The funny thing about the Wii is when you try to make a really good graphical game, you can. But one reason we went with Climax is because on the PSP version of Silent Hill Origins, they actually did some really cool things. And I think Origins is still one of the better-looking PSP titles.
Mm-hmm.
So we knew that they could pull off some things that a lot of other publishers don't know is possible on the lower-end platform. So
Right on.
We figured they could do that for the Wii, and we were right. I mean, besides enhancing their flashlight technology again, so that looks amazing, and all the shadowing.
Oh, yeah, it looks great.
We also have snow technology, where there's a ton of snow falling, and then combined, every snowflake casts a shadow, and a bunch of other ridiculous things like that. So the game should look really good. I think it's going to impress a lot of people who think the Wii isn't a viable platform. I think they're going to be surprised by a lot of the stuff that they see.
That's great. And have you played it on all the platforms? I mean, that might seem like a silly question, but I don't know.
Yeah, I'm constantly playing it on every platform.
Okay. I don't really know. You know, I only know, like, animators and things like this, like how they're involved as producers and directors and things like this. I'm not too hip on exactly how knee deep a developer for a game might be. Although I do a show called We Talk Games, so I don't know how that figures in. So you're playing on everything. Well, I guess that you don't want to shoot yourself in the foot by saying anything wrong, but do you like how the Wii plays with the Wiimote, and you think that really adds to the interaction, or is it just as good on a thumbstick?
I really like the Wii control scheme. I think it's very immersive.
Cool.
And so players who have that option to play it on the Wii, I think, are going to... You know, it does things that Silent Hill hasn't done before. And it also uses... I'm proud of it because it uses all the Wii features. It uses the speaker for the phone calls and the Silent Hill static.
I'm a sucker for the speaker in the Wiimote. That's probably my favorite thing of that gimmick, is that speaker in there.
Right. So, I mean, I know a lot of people feel like, you know, is there anything cool they can do on the Wii, or what can be done? And I always think, oh, I can't wait till they play Silent Hill, because, I mean, it uses all these cool features that we were promised could do cool things a long time ago.
Great.
But for people who, you know, they don't have a Wii, or they really like their PSP or whatnot, we've spent a lot of time making sure the controls still feel intuitive.
Mm-hmm.
We didn't just slap the old Silent Hill control scheme onto the game, because with a lot of the new gameplay features, it wouldn't make sense. So it's an all-the-control scheme on every platform, but we really wanted to make it feel just as immersive. You know, you won't necessarily feel like you're shoving a monster off of you if you don't have the Wii, because that's a really tactile thing on the Wii.
Sure.
But you'll still feel like you can do everything just as easily and provide the same experience. That was really our goal, is whichever platform you have, you get the same intense Silent Hill experience.
Fantastic. Now, what was one of the first titles that you worked on for Konami?
The first title I worked on at Konami was Contra 4.
Oh, great. Well, that leads right into what I'm going to talk about then. So this was a great game for the Nintendo DS. Now, Kyle and I talked about the new Contra Rebirth, and we're both in love with that, except that it was a little short.
Yeah.
But the Contra 4 for the Nintendo DS, I had to go back and play through that. Some of the coolest and most diverse designs in the series, I think. And I'm a big Contra fan. I got to be honest with you, which I didn't tell you before, but Konami is my favorite game company of all game companies.
Well, there you go.
And my number one favorite game and series of all time is the Castlevania series. Probably because I'm a huge TurboGrafx mark, a big PC Engine fan. I loved everything NEC came out with. Even, you know, their PCFX, which, you know, I got to play one game on that I could understand. But I pretty much loved everything that they came out with, and still to this day, that Dracula X was just one of my favorite games ever. But Contra, definitely very close behind. And Contra 4, I, of course, was biting my nails, very worried about this polygon mess coming to the Nintendo DS, which the Nintendo DS is horrible at polygons. And thankfully, I got a nice pixel-looking, great use, and like I said, some of the best level designs that I've seen. You start out, it's just like your regular side-scrolling, Rambo-y, Contra 1 NES type of normal game, but then as soon as level 2 comes in, it's incredibly modern, and you have, you know, all the mutants and the monsters coming down on you and everything, the aliens, But it also pays homage, it seems to me, I don't know if this was the intent, to like the hardcore from the Genesis and the Alien Wars from the Super Nintendo. Mm-hmm. Because all of a sudden then you're thrust into this whole new game where instead of like the Super Nintendo had the top-down segment with that right. crazy Mode 7 going on, this one has a, more of a first-person thing happening, first-person-ish shooting going on. How did those level designs come about?
Well, Contra 4, we're really fortunate. I was working with another producer named Simon Lai here on that, and we both kind of pitched a new Contra idea, and they put us together, and we came up with Contra 4, and we really, and then we went to WayForward, the developer, and they didn't know what we were going to them for.
Okay.
And we told them, you know, well, here's what we want you to do. We want you to make a 2D Contra game, hand-drawn, and make, like, the best Contra game ever.
Mm.
And then they had all the same questions that I think fans had when they said, oh, well, do you want a bunch of 3D stuff? And we're like, well, no, just not a lot has to focus on 2D. And they said, well, do you want us to sort of focus on this? And we're like, no, it has to be about the old games. So they were getting more and more excited.
Oh.
And in the end, it was just a bunch of Contra fans making the perfect Contra game.
It really is amazing. I love the rocket level. That's probably one of my favorite moments in gaming.
We actually, after that first meeting, we went to lunch, and we were thinking, okay, so we have to come up with really good levels. What's like a Contra level? And one of the designers said, well, like, what if there was a giant rocket taking, a missile taking off out of a missile silo, and you had to grab onto the missile, and then you rode it, and it rotated through the air, and we said, okay, yeah, we'll make that a level. And then actually made it in the final game, obviously.
Yeah, and uses the dual screens and everything. Amazing.
Yep. We really, I mean, our focus was to sort of show, like, what was best about all the old games. So, you know, we have the jungle, and we have the 3D first-person type stages are kind of like the tunnel stages from the first game.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have sort of a bigger missile ride, and you kind of rode missiles in Contra 3. And so we didn't want it to be a rehash of the old games where you'd already done it before. But we wanted to sort of pay homage to it, like you said, but then make it bigger and better and do what a sequel would do.
Definitely.
That's what we called it Contra 4.
And having the boss become a level, I think, was another really neat innovation.
That was another one of those ideas from early on, was like, what if we could pull this off? And then that's what we ended up with.
Amazing. But I do have to ask you, and spoiler alert, not really, but what's with this SCTV is on the air? Somebody, a big fan of SCT, Second City Television or something? At the end there.
I probably have to ask WayForward about that one.
Oh, okay, very good. Because it something about blows up real good happens in there. So, going into this game, what were some of your favorite Contra moments from previous titles? Like, I can think of Hardcore, I think you're on a train, and you sort of see other bits of the train, and this is just off the cuff, but do you have any big standout Contra moments that you recall?
Yeah, my favorite one is really dumb, but at the beginning of Contra 3, there's kind of a car on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And the only reason the car is there is so you can shoot it and it'll explode. And to me, as a kid when I was playing it, you know, I'd played the first two Contra games, but that told me, like, this is Contra, but better. And for some reason, it's always stuck with me. But all the big moments, I like the waterfall boss in Contra 1.
Oh, yeah.
And I don't know. The bosses are pretty big. Those are pretty big moments.
Yeah, definitely. So, yeah, this is one of my favorite Contra games, I think. And now you're also working on now Rocket Knight.
Mm-hmm.
These are all established franchises. How do you prepare for creating a new or revisited chapter in an established series?
Well, it really depends on the approach you're taking, what you're trying to accomplish with that game. So with Contra 4, we were saying, maybe Contra's lost its way recently, and we need to make what it used to be. So then it kind of seems obvious because it's called Contra 4, but back then, before we knew it was being called that, it was sort of like, what if we were making a sequel to Contra 3?
Uh-huh.
What would that game be like? And so that's kind of the approach we took, where, you know, with Silent Hill, Shattered Memories, we're sort of saying, we're using the weird, creepy, mind-screwing quality of Silent Hill and applying it to Silent Hill 1. So
it's like a sideways
twist than you'd expect.
I see.
But we're also changing all the gameplay, and we're rethinking what could be even more scary than this formula that we have. So that's kind of where we're going with that. And then with Rocket Knight, it's a lot different because that series hasn't really existed for 15 years.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, when I was pitching that, I was sort of doing it as like, here's this cool thing I remember, guys. Let's try to make it again.
Yeah.
It took me, I actually pitched it the same time I pitched what became Contra 4.
Oh, wow.
So it's been a longer time trying to get that to happen. The old Rock and I games, all of them are kind of different. They don't feel the exact same.
Sure.
And so the approach that we're taking to this is figure out what Rockonite is, what that feel is, and that what would make it stand out, what makes it special. And then that's what we're focusing on.
Cool. So
hopefully this should also be the ultimate Rockonite game.
Oh, man. I can't wait because I loved Rockonite Adventures. We talked about it many times on the show. A very highly recommended game. Sparkster, you know, we were a little worried there. We didn't know. Is Sparkster going to be full of Tood? Is he going to be just another Tood character? Now, this new Rockonite, he's not going to be a Tood character, is he?
No, I promise he's not going to be filled with attitude.
Very good. Because, you know, we've seen Bubsy and Gex and maybe even Acrobat. I don't know if Acrobat did it that much. Arrow, I should say. But definitely Sonic. And we've seen, you know, the abundance of Tood previously occur to people that we actually cared about. And we were just a little worried around the We Talk Games community coffee machine maker.
No, I was actually talking to Jeremy Blaustein, who worked on, he used to work for Konami, and he worked on the original Rockonite games as a localization and sort of advice. And he said he didn't have a lot of memories of working on it back in the day because it was so long ago. But they had meetings about what type of attitude Sparkster should have.
Okay.
And it sounds like we all got really lucky that Sparkster didn't turn out just like Sonic.
Yeah.
So we're making sure that he doesn't turn out like Sonic now, and he's going to be the same earnest type character that we love from 15 years ago.
Do we know any platforms that this is going to be aimed at?
Yeah, Rockonite is going to be on XBLA, PSN, and also PC on Steam.
Okay. Oh, right. Steam. Okay. So this is going to be strictly DLC then?
Yeah.
Very good. One of the aspects of Rockonite was the different modes of gameplay. It would start off like a platformer and then as a side-scrolling shooter. And right. It looks like that's what's happening here in Rockonite.
Yeah. Playing the original, I mean, depending on which Rockonite game you're playing, there's a different balance of it.
Mm-hmm.
But we really looked at the original where the platforming, which is pretty key. And then there's the shooter stages, like you mentioned, which are kind of like Gradius.
Mm-hmm.
And those are really key. And then there were a lot of other mini, like, gimmicky levels.
Sure.
And we really wanted to focus on the platforming and the rocketing to sort of establish, again, like I said, like, what is Rockonite? And then the sort of a mission statement of, this is what Rockonite feels like. This is what it is. So that's really where our focus is on the platforming and the Rocket Pack levels.
And I really remember that Rocket Pack in the first one. You really had something about the physics of it, that the way it was animated, the way that it controlled, really felt like you had a rocket pack on.
Mm-hmm.
Was there focus put on that mechanic?
Yeah, the core of the gameplay had to be the rocket, because it's called Rocket Knight, and that's what separates him from other characters, is this rocket pack. But in the original game, I feel like when I play it, it something about it feels like I can't control it.
Yeah.
And there's a good aspect of that, and there's a bad aspect of that when you're getting into complicated levels and you want to use this cool thing that Sparkster has, but you can't, because if you do, you'll fly into spikes you can't see and die. And so we really wanted this new one to give you that feeling of freedom and excitement by using the rocket pack without the, whoops, you can't really use it here because you'll die.
I see.
So we really want the player to feel like they have a ton of moves at their disposal and they are kind of free to solve the situations as they want.
Okay.
Hopefully all the good with none of the bad.
Very good. And I saw 3D, and I'm a big worrywart about 3D. You know, I've seen 3D ruin too many of the things I care about,
right.
And as an easy out. But this is looking nice. This is looking good. I'm happy with that.
It's hard to tell from screens and video.
Sure.
But I want to assure everybody that I know a lot of games, when they go to 3D, when they go to 2.5D or whatever you want to call it,
right.
There's sort of a lag in the controls, and it feels different or floatier or just not right like a 2D game would.
Mm-hmm.
We don't do that. I've worked with Climax really closely to make sure this game feels like you're playing a 2D game.
Oh, great.
It's responsive, it's fun, it's fast. I know people have to take my word on that for a while, but it plays really well, and I love playing it myself. So.
Oh, great. So, and we're looking at probably next year, I guess, for this title, right?
Yeah, next year.
Can't wait. Can't wait. I know Kyle can't wait either. He's a big Rocket Knight fanboy as well. Are there any other classic IPs within the Konami library that you'd like to breathe new life into or get your hands on?
I feel bad. I've worked on so many that I don't want to be a jerk and take them all. But I'm a huge Konami fan too, so I mean, pretty much anything I'd like to see more of. If I could work on it, that'd be better. But
Right on. Anything else that you wanted to bring up that I might have missed?
Everyone look forward to Silent Hill and Rocket Knight. They'll be great, I promise.
We are looking forward to it. Tom Hewlett, thank you so much for joining us on We Talk Games.
No problem. Thank you, guys.
Bye now. Tom Hewlett, video game producer for Konami. Tom Hewlett. Hey, we're going to have Ouch on now. Ouch is going to make his first appearance on We Talk Games. Open it up, Keith. I'm feeling good. Youngstown, Ohio! Hey, high in the middle, round on the sides, Ohio. Ouch! Ouch!
Thank you, Wiggly. Wow.
Hey, it's great to have you on this version of the We Talk Games audio program.
I've been a listener for a long time. It's great to finally talk to you, man.
Oh, cool! Great. I've never talked to you before, except for the...
I think I've done a few emails, but, you know, that was a long time ago. So.
Right, and that was under...
We're in the future now.
Now we are in the future, and it's so great to be here with the flying cars and the volcanoes.